What I'm giving tonight is startling. I hope that you are partially knowledgeable. I hope that you at least know somewhat of the fact that there is a plot for the destruction of your freedom. Otherwise, what is being said tonight could be very, very dangerous to your mental thought patterns, if I may say. A number of months ago, I met a gentleman by the name of John Bergen. John Bergen is an outstanding businessman of Minneapolis, Minnesota, quite well to do, and owns one of the largest nut importers of America, importing firms of America. John Bergen is very well respected in Minneapolis and is a very reputable individual, not a novice by any stretch of the imagination. He has political clout. And when he goes to Washington, even though Minneapolis and Minnesota are very liberal, even the liberals listen to him. John Bergen said to me some while back, "Lindsay, you need to know a gentleman by the name of Jonathan May." I said, "Who is Jonathan May?" I had never heard his name. He said, "Jonathan May is a citizen of England." And he said, "Jonathan May has traveled extensively worldwide, knows the issues, became quite knowledgeable through certain sources in the Council of Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission as to what the internationalists intend to do worldwide. It so disturbed him, and having certain Arab sources that he knew, he decided that he would attempt to counteract the game plan of the internationalists." Now, the internationalists are the ones that I attempt to describe in my latest book, Syndrome of Control, a group of power elite individuals, probably no more than 12 to 15 people, who hold the purse strings of every nation in the world and control most of the governments of the world through the control of their finances. He found out what these individuals were doing, and it so startled him until he decided that he would counteract what they were doing by establishing a worldwide Federal Reserve. You do recognize, of course, that the Federal Reserve System controls the money, the interest rate, the general economy, your lifestyle and mind of every person in America. It is not an agency of the federal government. And so Jonathan May decided he would establish a worldwide Federal Reserve in order to help save certain nations. He got the Arabs to invest multi amounts of money. I cannot name the exact figure. You'll hear him give some of it tonight himself in his own words. The Arabs had already said, "We will be involved." At the point that the Arabs were to deliver the funds in order to start this new creature, the internationalists in England found out about it. They threatened the life of Jonathan May and would not allow the Arabs to transfer the money into England for him to start this. At that point, Jonathan May felt that his life was in jeopardy, and he came to America. He did the wrong thing, of course, because the exact same powers that be that control England likewise control America. And in August of 1986, Jonathan May was arrested and put in federal prison in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on erroneous charges. John Bergen put me in touch with him by telephone because I was not allowed to go to the federal prison. Jonathan May, after numerous conversations and after a lot of persuasion, agreed to allow me to tape a conversation over the telephone, which you'll hear parts of tonight. In this conversation, he tells the game plan, the timetable, and the inner manipulations of the power elite of the world as he knew it because of certain sources that he had. He gives his story as to what happened to him. Now, the 20 to 25 minute tape that we're going to be listening to in sections tonight, and an explanation with almost every statement, you're going to find it very unique, indifferent, different, startling, and possibly very, very disturbing in some senses, yet information-wise will probably be some of the most in-depth information that you or I have ever heard. The reason I say that is because I have been studying this issue for the past 6 years. I have traveled extensively nationwide. Last year, I was 7 months on the road without ever stopping and averaged 2 speaking engagements per day. Average crisscrossing America every other week, and I thought that I knew most of the answers to what the boys were doing. After hearing Jonathan May, and having him tell me some things that only top executives in the oil companies had told, which I had never told in public, I was willing to believe that his story was credible, because for the first time, Jonathan May put together some pieces of the puzzle that allowed me to see the complete total picture that I had never been able to put together since 1973 and 4, when I first sat in the board meetings with the oil company officials and found out that there positively was a plot for the control of America and the world, its finances and its people, by a group of power elite, and heard the top echelon oil companies officials saying it and telling about it in their own words. That was when I first became knowledgeable and disturbed, and since then I've tried to put all the pieces together, but there were some pieces that I never could get, because I did not have inroads into the CFR and the Trilateral Commission and the inner workings and manipulations of such organizations as the Bilderbergers and others. Jonathan May did have inroads into those organizations because of his worldwide travel and many contacts that he had, and put together the final pieces of the puzzle. Now, what I'm going to do that's so unique and different tonight, I have in my hand a tape recorder, which I'm hoping will be audible easily over the public address system, and I'm going to play portions of Jonathan May's explanation to you. Then I will stop and draw on the chalkboard the related subjects that will cause us to be able to understand the complete picture. And as far as I know, this is the first audience ever that this information has been given to. I have never given it before in public. I do not know what the repercussions of what I'm doing tonight will be. I do know that certain things are told on this cassette tape that the powers that be would be very startled if they knew they were known, because very few knew them except the top echelon themselves. Therefore, we will give a portion of the tape an explanation with the related material. So I'll begin at this time by playing just a portion, and then I'll go back for an explanation. Here goes Jonathan May, in his own words, in his own voice, right from the federal jail in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we go, and then an explanation after a portion of his talk.
First of all, there are 13 families that effectively control the central banks of the hard currency countries. The hard currency countries are the countries whose currencies are caused not to fluctuate as much as the other countries' currencies fluctuate. Those 13 families have the control of the policy making and decision making of the central banks of those countries.
13 families that control the currency of the world. Now, those are the families that basically manipulate gold prices every morning on the London Exchange. They're the 13 families who control the regional banks of the Federal Reserve, the 13 families that would control the currencies that are not allowed to fluctuate. You may note that the American dollar is the standard for all of the currency of the world. Wherever the American dollar goes, other nations are affected in relation to that dollar. Not only do these 13 families control the currency, but likewise control the banks in the leading nations of the world, the industrialized nation. With this, he goes on to say,
they all with one accord practice fractional reserve banking. The fractional reserve banking has allowed the central banks to permit the prime banks, whose owners and controllers are the same people as the central banks, to lend up to 26 units of currency for every one unit of currency they have, quote, on deposit.
And as Paul Harvey says, here's the rest of the story.
The initial final stages of the final phase of System 2000, which is the global creditors unilateral totalitarian plan, were put into effect back in the mid-70s. A Pentagon official and three other US government officials visited the Prime Minister of Nigeria, paid him $50 million to double, in fact, more than double, the price of Bonilight, which is the crude oil from Nigeria.
Now, he says that they visited Nigeria and said that they would give them $50 million across the board in cash with no repayment if they would be willing to double the price of light oil. Basic explanation is following. Only two nations in the world have light crude. Light crude oil is an oil that as it comes out of the ground, it could almost be used in your automobile. It's the most valuable oil in the world. And according to the price of light crude, all other oil in the world is priced in accordance with the way those two nations price light crude. Whoever controls the price of light crude oil likewise controls all the oil prices in the world. Therefore, he said, they went to Nigeria, one of the two nations that has light crude, said, we'll give you this money if you will double the price of light crude. Now, the Arabs come into picture.
At the same time, Bush and some others, the Trinational Commission, were in the Middle East, persuading the Middle East nations and England to consolidate OPEC, of which, of course, America is also a part, but never mentioned. The deal cut with the Middle Eastern oil producers was that the oil buyers were prepared to pay significantly higher prices for the oil, provided the Middle Eastern nations supported America, this is how it was put, by investing the revenues in the big banks in America. Sheikh Yamani's nephew assured us that Sheikh Yamani and the other oil ministers did not know until late in the 70s, early in the 80s, that the controlling interests of the prime banks were also the same people who had the controlling interests of the major oil companies.
The sheikhs of that day and time did not understand world finance. They did not know that the international bankers were taking them, and neither did they understand that America's major oil companies, such as Standard Oil, Atlantic Richfield, and the other major oil companies, were likewise controlled by the money of the international bankers' banks in New York. Therefore, the total picture of intake of profit on the part of the international bankers was all coming back to them. These Arabs, not understanding any of this international finance, fell for the plot of the international bankers, and little by little the story becomes more bizarre.
Actually, through a joint stock trust that was set up by the original Rockefeller here in America in 1870, 3 years before the U.S. government declared joint stock trusts illegal in 1873, it is that entity that is the ultimate controlling factor in America of the prime banks, the Federal Reserve Board.
There was a joint stock trust. They're no longer legal in America, but they were set up in the 1800s, and it's under those joint stock trust that the international bankers' banks in New York are allowed to operate, which other banks in America are not allowed to operate under. Do you wonder why? The Chase Manhattan Chemical Bank, J.P. Morgan's bank, and the others in New York are showing all-time record earnings, while around America, literally hundreds of banks per month are going broke. The reason is because they are operating under a grandfather clause of a joint bank trust, which is no longer legal, but because of the grandfather clause, they can operate in New York, that section of banks, and in so doing, take these finances and be able to manipulate with them both us and the Arabs. And with this, he continues.
The major oil companies and many of the major multinationals, that trust is in joint control of the Rockefeller Foundation and the European interests. The deal cut with the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the Middle Eastern people was that they should put their money in the prime banks. They did not know that the prime banks were able to lend 20 to 1, I think it is in this country, but maybe more now, but their revenues, all they were receiving was term. Because they had locked in deposits, the banks were then able to make loans to the third world nations.
Now, through the funds that they had gained from the Arabs, which was directly related to the increase of oil prices, through a manipulation that had been made with the Arab world, and taking the price of your gasoline from 30 cents a gallon to $1.20 a gallon, now with this money coming back into the international bankers' banks, they take those funds, which originally came from you and from me, and invested them in the third world countries. You do remember 15, 20 years ago, when the international bankers started investing in third world country loans. The countries that are going broke today, they invested back then, but they wanted those countries to go broke, and here is that part of the story.
Knowing and relying on the greed of the ministers of these nations to mishandle that money over the years to the extent where that manipulated greed has caused those countries to be in the position they're in.
They wanted those third world countries to go broke. You'll remember about the time that most of the third world countries were getting their independence. Independence from England, independence from France, independence from America, and they were setting up their own governments. Now, he said at that point, the international bankers loaned them these large sums of money, which had come to them through the Arabs as a result of their oil prices. At this point, the international bankers wanted the third world countries to misuse those funds. They intended for them to go broke. It was part of the plan for those third world countries to squander the funds. Remember that the new leaders of these countries themselves had never governed any country before. They knew very little even about government. They had only been colonial countries under some other country. So the international bankers knew that their leaders would squander the money that was being given to them, which international bankers had taken from the Arabs and just from you originally through oil prices, and now here is where it goes.
In 1981, I was exposed to trying to help the Hunt brothers in Texas because they, with John Connolly, who was then the governor of Texas, who was also then the Undersecretary of the Treasury, had secretly tried to implement a currency, a new currency for Texas, since Texas is only a part of the Union, by treaty, which is automatically renewed every year, but not necessarily automatically renewed every year. It's become a tradition, obviously, that it's renewed every year, but it's actually not renewed every year.
Did you know that Texas is not a state by vote, such as other states, but a state by treaty? I see one head shaking here on the front. Texas is a state by treaty, not by vote. And the reason that the Hunt brothers are being broken today is because the internationalists knew what the Hunt brothers and Connolly, former governor of Texas, were trying to do. Texas being a state by treaty, not by vote, any time that Texas wishes to, they cannot renew their treaty for that year and could legally secede from the Union. And the Hunt brothers and John Connolly knew that Texas had the ability of setting up their own country, having their own currency, and being solvent and not under the dictates of the Federal Reserve or the bureaucracy in Washington. And they were in the process of gaining a corner on the silver of the world in order to be able to finance a process whereby they could overcome the international bankers. And at that point, the Hunt brothers were broken, John Connolly was almost killed, and Texas, who could have been the only state in the Union to fulfill it, had some major problems. And today, Dallas and Fort Worth, Texas, you ride through the cities and you would vow and declare that it was almost a ghost town in certain areas. Storefronts are closed. People have moved out of $150,000, $200,000 homes. The internationalists became so angry at what Texas had done until they broke the back of the oil industry and the major oil producers of Texas, and it was all by a design plan, and we go further.
And the intention was that Texas was going to create its own money. The Hunts were in partnership with the Shah of Iran, a German banker, and an Austrian banker. The Federal Reserve Board got to hear about it. The Hunts were buying silver irresponsibly because they had one man doing both buying and selling on the same floors of all the exchanges. and word got out, and the result of that was that the German banker was murdered. You may remember the Baader-Meinhof terrorists at the time, who only actually ever murdered one person, although a lot of industrialists were captured and held to ransom and various other things. Only one actually man, which was a banker, ever got murdered. And it was that banker that was a partner of the Hunts.
Hunt Brothers of Texas and a banker were attempting to do this. He said that one was killed, the Shah of Iran was deposed, and the Hunt Brothers today are filing for bankruptcy. You see what the internationalists can do whenever you attempt to thwart their plan.
The Austrian banker was so badly beaten up that you'll never get out of a mental institution. And the Hunts, you know what happened to them. They're virtually bankrupt today, despite the fact that they had about 16 billion in worth at the time. The Shah was perfectly healthy when he left Iran. He was only declared sick when he arrived in America, held in, quote, protective custody, unquote, in U.S. military bases where he was treated.
You'll remember that Congressman Hansen was in the House of Representatives in Washington. He heard what was happening in Iran and wanted to investigate. Congress would not let him go. He went to Iran, paid his own airline ticket to go over. When he got there, the Khomeini gave him an audience. The Khomeini said, "We don't want these hostages any more than you want us to have them." That wasn't what we were told by the media, was it? Khomeini said, "I would like to give you one half of the hostages to take home with you tomorrow morning if you will promise to start an investigation into the relationship between the Shah of Iran, Chase Manhattan Bank, Henry Kissinger, and President Carter." Congressman Hansen called back to someone in Congress whose name he mentions in this book and says, "I can bring half of the hostages home tomorrow. Would you like me to?" He said, "I'll call you back tomorrow and tell you." Would you believe America held hostage while he says, "We'll call you back tomorrow and tell you whether you can bring them home or not"? The next day the call came back. Congressman Hansen was told, "Get on the next airplane. Come home. Don't bring any hostages with you. Do not do any negotiating. You have no right to speak on the part of the Congress of the United States of America, even though you are a congressman. Get home immediately." When he came back, he found out that it was documented, by the way, and placed in the congressional record. He found that President Carter knew that the hostages were going to be taken. He knew approximately how long they were going to be kept. He knew that they were there for a reason. And the release of the hostages was not negotiated by the State Department of the United States of America. The release of the hostages in Iran was negotiated by a negotiator of Chase Manhattan Bank in New York. And the hostages were kept, and America held hostage while the bankers got the Shah's money in their banks before he was killed, and in turn got much of the money of Iran. And do you wonder that Iran is mad at us today? After the shenanigans we pulled to get their money into Chase Manhattan Bank so it could remain solvent and be one of the wealthiest institutions in the world today? That is what Jonathan May is speaking of, and we continue.
And became progressively worse and ultimately was shipped off to die. Not before all his assets had been frozen, which doesn't make much sense until you realize the ploy of the globalists. That's something of a red herring, but it's interesting. In 1983, we became aware of the fact that a group of very, very quiet bank holding companies, which are authorized under Regulation Y, Section 225.4, of USC.
All right, he says that they formed a group of bank holding companies. The international bankers' banks did. And the reason they formed them was so that they could not be held responsible, so that Chase Manhattan Chemical Bank and J.P. Morgan's bank could not be held responsible for the money that the Arabs had been put into their banks. They formed bank holding companies who in turn would loan out the money to the third world countries. Knowing that the third world countries were going to go broke after they had already destroyed the Shah, had the money in their banks, loaning out exorbitant amount of money, determining they were going broke, and letting the bank holding companies hold these loans. knowing what was going to happen when these third world countries went broke.
To extend credit, also to do it internationally, incidentally, but to extend credit wherever they feel like it, under whatever terms they feel like it, under Regulation Y. We became aware of the fact that those companies were receiving loans from the prime banks to buy foreclosed real property in the form of agricultural property and businesses with bricks and mortar.
One was for the purpose of loaning money to the third world countries. The second bank holding company was for the purpose of borrowing money from the international bankers' banks in order to purchase farm land. Isn't this rather interesting? To purchase farmland and farms and certain corporations in the United States of America. So here we have two bank holding companies. One loaning money to third world countries from the Arabs' money coming through the international bankers' banks. One purchasing farmland and certain businesses in America that are making a lot of money. The farmland and the businesses will continue to make money. The third world countries are designated to go under.
From liquidations and foreclosures and bankruptcies which were being effected by the FDIC and the FSLIC, which are indeed subsidiaries, at least totally under the control of the Federal Reserve Board. We couldn't understand this.
And literally dozens of banks weekly all over America are being bought. Who has the money to buy these banks, by the way? And where did they get the money to buy these banks from? It's being bought by the high oil price money that goes to the Arabs, deposited into the international bankers' banks. They buy the banks that are intentionally being closed around America, some of which are still solvent. They're also buying the farmland of America through the farmers that are being put into bankruptcy because of the high American dollar in relation to foreign currencies, and they're doing it all with our own money, which pays for gasoline at the pump, which goes to the Arabs, to the international bankers' banks, to the bank holding companies, which purchases the banks back in America that are going under today. If you wonder where they're getting all the money from to do these things, now you know. It's your own money through gas prices.
And between 1983 and 1985, researched it and still couldn't understand it. In the end of 1985, we were approached by an emissary from President... Hang on, just... An emissary of President Marcos and President Suharto and another from Indonesia with a severe problem that they had, and the problem they had was that having borrowed all the money they borrowed, they needed more money, but the only way that the IMF were prepared to lend them money was if they eliminated their own currency, became dollar denominated, subsequently eliminated cash altogether, and went on to a unilateral, centralized credit card system, which was part of their social security system, part of their identity system.
I must stop. I gave this such a long period of time because you need to get the entire statement. Marcos, an emissary from Marcos in the Philippines. You do know that Marcos was deposed 1 year ago. And Indonesia came to Jonathan May and said, the international bankers' banks in New York, a representative from those banks have just come to us and said, we will forgive all of your loans. You cannot pay them back. You can't pay back the interest. You can't pay back the principal. But we'd like to make you a bargain. We will forgive your loans. By the way, whose money was that that they had loaned out to these third world countries? It wasn't theirs. Whose was it? It was the Arab money because of high oil prices that the people of the world had paid. And they said, we will forgive your loans, your principal, and your interest. You never have to pay it back if you will do the following. Number one, do away with your national currency. Does this sound familiar? Do away with your national currency. Dollar denominate your new currency. go to a debit card system instead of a currency system, and if you will give us perpetual rights to all natural resources in your country. Just after that, by the way, Marcos in the Philippines was deposed. Why? He told the international bankers to get out of his country. He would not give them sovereignty over his country. And here's what happened.
Everybody in the country, social security number was synonymous with a credit number. And then their central bank was to act as the wholesaler for credit, which was extended to it by the new super bank, which was announced by Paul Volcker on the 27th of October 1985 and subsequently almost immediately ratified by Ronald Reagan. The six digits of the name of which all are, the digits of the three names of which all add up to six, incidentally. A further contingent condition of the benevolence of the IMF, and I'm being facetious, was that in order to help the economy of that country, those countries, the IMF were going to nominate external, non-domestic corporations to properly engineer and exploit and excavate the minerals of those countries, the natural resources of those countries, in return for perpetual royalties, and in return for those same companies' nomination of all the ancillary companies that would be involved with the exploration and excavation, thereby bringing prosperity to the nation. But Marcos was sharp enough to pick up the word perpetual and realized quite obviously that in so doing he would be signing away the sovereignty of his nation.
So Marcos realized what the international bankers were doing to him, that if he gave them perpetual rights to all of the minerals of his country, even though the international bankers had promised that they would send in corporations to develop these minerals, but that they themselves would get the profits from those minerals, but yet it would put the people in the Philippines to work, yet Marcos knew that if he gave them this contract of perpetual rights, that he was giving up the sovereignty of his country to the international bankers' banks and to the International Monetary Fund. Marcos, at this point, told them, "I will not do it. Get out of my country." And it was only a matter of weeks after that that Marcos was deposed by whom? None other than riots incited by payment of the international bankers, banks themselves, as Jonathan May continues to show.
When we heard the word perpetual, when we heard the word totally forgiven, we then immediately began to recognize what another group of holding companies operating with the previous group of holding companies that we mentioned were doing. And what they were doing, the second group of holding companies, was receiving credit from the first group of holding companies to purchase assets and liabilities from the prime banks. Now, the only liabilities they were purchasing were the liabilities represented by the deposits of the Arab nations. The only assets they were buying were the assets represented by the loans made to some of the debtor nations.
Now, you'll notice that these two holding companies, to which the money was given by the International Bankers Bank so that they could not be held responsible for what happened to the money that went out, the holding companies were holding nothing but liabilities off the loans made to the third world countries, which they could not repay. Now it is designed, as he's going to show, that the third world countries default on their payment. By the way, did you hear something about that this past week? It was on the news. What countries said that they would not pay? Brazil and what else? Argentina. Both of them said, "We're not going to pay." They didn't tell you that agreements had been made with those countries to eventually forgive their loans, did they? If they would sign away perpetually the rights to the minerals of those countries. Watch out. You're going to see a rash of third world countries not paying their debts, and then here is what will happen on the heels of that. The bank holding companies are designed to go broke, and watch the events from that point on.
It then became clear, as a result of actually initially observation and subsequently ratification by information from within the Trilateral Commission, where we have our own people, that the forgiveness of the Third World debts would quite obviously eliminate the assets which were being purchased by this second group of holding companies, leaving them only with the liabilities that were owed to the Middle Eastern nations. The prime banks and the holding companies' arrangement was merely that the prime banks were going to act as servicing agents for the holding companies, again so that the Third World nations didn't know that the holding companies actually were owed the money, because it was filtering through the prime banks and still is. The effect of the elimination of the assets of the second group of holding companies, real estate and everything else, the catastrophic effect of that has been designed to throw the American stock market, American private corporations, American real estate, and people in general into a state of confusion. The plan is that at that time, the state of confusion will be greeted with the salvation of the benevolent bankers on two fronts. Firstly, they propose to eliminate cash because of the collapse, and also, secondarily, to stop drug trafficking. Thirdly, to stop tax cheating. And nobody can argue with any of those reasons.
First of all, he says, we've got to have a new currency. Isn't that great? And the next thing we'll have to do is use that new currency to stop the dope traffic in the condition in America. And he said, we'll also have to have a debit card for the purpose of stopping people from tax cheating anymore. Because if we don't, we'll never get ourselves back on our feet again. And if you'll just turn everything over to us benevolent bankers, the Arabs now have broken you, we'll be glad to bring you out of this chaotic condition that we have if you'll just take our debit card and our number. Will the American public fall for it? Lock, stock, and barrel, as the old Georgia farmer would say. Why? Because we've never been told the truth. Now, we continue.
It is at that point that they intend to implement a mandatory credit card, identity, social security, government, if you like, ID card, which will be satellite linked through the, quote, Star Wars program, which has nothing to do, at least it is, it's about 40% to do with Star Wars and 62% concerned with the transmission of banking information.
But because of the plan that they're initiating, as we've heard tonight, they will go directly from the present currency to a debit card and a number which is required to be taken if you're to do business. And those of you who know the scriptures know that God has already said it would take place. Now, you've heard of the Star Wars program, have you? You know that they've said they want to put Star Wars up for the purpose of protecting America against missiles coming in from the Soviets or other countries. He says that from inside information he has gotten from the Council of Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission and inside sources with internationalists, that he has come to find out that the Star Wars program is already put in place, and that 60% of the Star Wars program and satellites in the sky have to do with the automatic transfer of funds from all over the world from the debit cards that the internationalists will seek to it that are established with every person having a number. And Star Wars is for the purpose of satellite transfer of all of that information into a central computer base where the world will be instantaneously controlled financially, and the American taxpayer paid for the Star Wars program to initiate the International Bankers International Credit Card System and Number System that will be initiated, and only 40% of the Star Wars program, he says, has anything to do with defense. 60% was put up there for the purpose of the international bankers' transfer of computer information, and we taxpayers paid for it.
To the central bank, which will be the super bank, into which all the other major banks will be linked, into which all the subsidiary banks, rather like a family, the super bank is to be the wholesaler, the prime banks, the retailers in this country, the prime banks, the retailers, the central banks, the retailers in the foreign countries that have capitulated to the IMS program. It is a world design, it is a world order, it is a world program, and our information may be wrong, but in timing, our information is not inaccurate in its information, but it may be wrong in its timing.
It only takes 5% of the third world countries to declare bankruptcy. When they do and accept the plan of the international bankers, then they can declare the bank holding companies bankrupt, the Arabs bankrupt, and initiate their plan because of the contrary reverse of the 22-to-1 loans. Only 5% of the third world countries could basically declare the world bankrupt and in the ownership and the hands of the international bankers. When this program is initiated and in place, it will wind up with the international bankers owning all mortgaged property. What will that do to the United States of America and the world? And what control will they have when they initiate their debit card and the automatic number that's required because the country is devastated? You notice that all of this is to their advantage because now they will own the majority of the United States of America, control the Arabs, and by a 30-year program of manipulation will have brought the peoples of the world under their control.